All right, I'd like to call to order the Design Review Board meeting of Tuesday, July 23rd. Can we have a roll call, please?
Member Smith?
Here.
Member Shelor?
Present.
Member Schneider?
Here.
Member Herrera, absent. Member Carroll?
Here.
Vice Chair Wignott?
Here.
Chair Branch?
Here. And we'll start with our administrative agenda and the meeting minutes.
B1 meeting minutes.
Move for approval is submitted.
I'll second it.
Discussion?
I'll be abstaining as I was not present at that meeting. This is my first meeting.
As will I.
Two, three. Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Minutes are approved.
Can I get who the second abstention was?
Member Carroll.
Okay.
Member Carroll.
Thank you.
And now on to item B2.
B2 Planning Director Report.
Thank you, Chair Branch and members of the Design Review Board. I think our first order of business is to extend our welcome to Mr. Shelor, a new member of Design Review Board. So welcome. Mr. Shelor was on the Planning Commission, and I'm glad that he's joined us, so we have a full complement of board members here today.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to working with this group for a while, so I really appreciate this opportunity.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to introduce Liana Campos, who is filling in for Linda Gregory today. She is out for this meeting, but she'll be back on our next meeting in August. And I suppose I should introduce myself, even though I'm no stranger to you, as your new secretary for the Design Review Board. It is an honor to serve this board, and I hope it will be a smooth transition. I have, as you know, served as a backup to Mr. Kollwitz. He does leave big shoes to fill, but I think you'll notice I do have a slightly different style, but I do hope that I'll be as good a resource as he was to you. So thank you for the opportunity. I have three news items. The first item is that last week at City Council on July 16th, two Planning Commission members were appointed, Eric Onen and Terry Dreschler. Eric Onen, as you know, former mayor and council member. His first meeting was yesterday's Planning Commission meeting. The second, Planning Commissioner Terry Dreschler, he's formerly the director of the Air Pollution Control District, and I believe he's retired, and he was not at yesterday's meeting, but I do expect that he'll be serving on the Planning Commission soon. And the second item is that yesterday's Planning Commission meeting, the commission heard the Rincon Palms Hotel project located at Stork and Hollister that got a positive recommendation and is being forwarded to the City Council for its consideration. I don't have a date certain yet, but the commission did conclude its review of the project yesterday. And finally, one item of note. The Central Coast Regional Water Quality Board is implementing these new low-impact development standards, which you may have heard are going to go into effect in March 2014, so later than we had thought. There is a free workshop being held by Project Clean Water of the County of Santa Barbara next Tuesday, July 30th. And it's a hands-on practical workshop for planners, design community. That's going to be at the Board of Supervisors hearing room. I'll send an email with the contact information. It is a free workshop, and they just ask that you RSVP ahead of time, and it's 8 to noon on Tuesday. And a lot of the city staff will be there, too. Since we're all going to need to learn about how these new regulations are going to be implemented. And so with that, that concludes the director's report. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And welcome. And we look forward to working with you. Item C.
Item C, review of agenda and projected agenda. And also for the record, if we can note that Member Herrera arrived in the room at approximately 3 or 4 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have one request for a continuance, to take the item off calendar, and that is item F1, case number 13-042 DRB, the Itsuki Japanese restaurant signage. And we will recalendar that when we have a revised application. So I think we need a motion on that.
Mr. Chair. That was a request by the applicant to take it off calendar or by staff?
That was an applicant's request.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. So I would so move to
I'll
take it off
it.
Calendar?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Item D, public comment. At this time, the public shall have an opportunity to comment on any non-agenda item relevant to the jurisdiction of the city. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak?
I have received no speaker slips at this time.
Okay. Seeing none, then we will move to item E.
Item E113-041-DRB, Transform Equipment Enclosures, 75 Castilian Drive.
I reviewed that with the planner, Daryl Mimick, and the comment from the minutes was to that the gate enclosure be painted gray, and so planner will make that a part of the conditions, and with that, I recommend approval as submitted.
I'll second it.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And I will be abstaining because I don't feel prepared to be able to vote on that.
Acknowledged. And that takes us to item F2, I believe.
Well, item F, the sign calendar, yeah.
Sign calendar, yes.
Okay, thank you, Chair, Chair Branch. Okay, so the sign subcommittee met today. Item F1, as we just heard, was requested to be taken off calendar, so we did not see that. We did, however, look at items F2 and F3. F2 was the Willow Springs overall sign plan for phase two, and also with some changes they made per our recommendations from the last meeting. We had recommended they had a temporary fence sign running along the corner of Calle Corral and Los Caneros. We had previously recommended that they be reduced in height to 4 feet, and they did it, and that the colors be consistent with the color palette of the project, and they did that. They had some other signs that we looked at the two entrances. We had some corrections on those regarding to the support posts that held them up, that they be given a brown color to fit the other signs in the area. And with that, we gave them preliminary, recommend the preliminary approval that they asked for that item. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I wasn't able to attend the sign subcommittee meeting, and I don't have any specific comments about what new signage that is being proposed for the phase two development, but rather for the overall sign plan that was submitted. I had a concern about the prohibited sign language not including temporary signs like banners, sandwich board signs. I was very pleased to see a prohibition on animated, audible, or moving signs because I think that, you know, that's for, that's a very distractive kind of thing. But the prohibited signs, I believe, should include temporary signs like flag, banner-type sandwich board signs, you know, balloons, buntings. I mean, there's a lot of things that somehow pop up when something is going on in a development, and I would like to see that the overall sign plan includes some prohibition of those temporary signs as well, and I don't know how the board feels about that one. That would have been my comment had I been at the subcommittee meeting and been able to make it at that time. So,
Chair, that was on my list of questions, and maybe I could benefit from an understanding of what constitutes a banner. Is it something that would be put along a wall that's kind of long but not high? Or would it be a banner similar to what's shown here, which are banners up above the existing frontage sign? And just wondering if there, because these may seem to me a little bit more appropriate in terms of banners. A new thing is happening here versus banners kind of placed strategically, visually, and I don't know how that's defined and how this board, but that was a question that I did have.
Yeah.
Chair Branch and members, if I could help clarify the situation. The concept behind the overall sign plan is that the kinds of signage that are allowed on the complex are limited only to the numbers and types that are specifically outlined in the sign plan. So if it's not called out for, it's not allowed. Now, there are a list of explicitly prohibited signs, and we did look at our typical list of signs that are prohibited that we have for shopping centers and other commercial development. And in crafting this, we had to tailor it because there are some, as you know, some advertising signs at the rear gate and such. If it's helpful to the board, we can, as staff, work with the applicant to examine a little bit of additional language, if that's a direction that the board is interested in, and incorporate it as I think is appropriate or reasonable. But I just wanted to call out very specifically that, again, if the way the sign plans are constructed, if they're not listed, they're not allowed. So I think if that helps put at ease some of the concerns about the proliferation of signage on the property, I think that might help give some context to the discussion. So, but that's certainly something we can take a look at between this point and when we come back for final approval, and as we work with the zoning administrator on the approval presentation to the zoning administrator.
So staff can work with the applicant on that, because that was my question, how we work from a procedural perspective, since they've just been given preliminary, well, once we vote on it,
yeah,
then technically they're given preliminary approval at that point.
Yeah, Chair Branch and members, the idea is that this is a preliminary approval, mm-hmm. So we understand that the zoning administrator may do its own review and modifications as necessary. So it's not that your preliminary approval would lock anything in stone at this time, so I don't feel that there's a procedural problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. All right, great. Well, then this is all in the record now, so that's good.
Mr. Chair, so can we tailor our approval to include the in the motion the understanding that staff will work with the applicant to amend the overall sign plan to include a prohibition on temporary signs that staff will
attempt to amend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, it's got to go past the applicant and
the zoning administrator.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I think that would be appropriate. How's the rest of the board think?
All right. So you made the motion. We still need a second.
Okay.
I'll second with that understanding.
With that understanding, yes.
I need to tread lightly here because I'm going to recuse myself on this, but I want to just be specific to the fact that The final approval for signs is the appeal point, not the preliminary approval, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Just so everybody's aware of that.
That is correct.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification. All right, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 I recuse myself.
Okay. And then the last item that was that we reviewed on the Science Subcommittee, F3, the Hotel Goleta signage. We had some recommendations for them, such as the pole sign out front, that they give a little bit of depth to the lettering so that there'll be a push-through letter on the sign. The cabinet is the existing cabinet that's there. They're just getting it refurbished. It will have an opaque background. It's lit only at night from the inside, so you just see the letters. So we recommended that they do a push-through to give it a little bit of depth. And also on the signage on the building itself, the question was brought up because it said at the beginning of the application it was non-illuminated, but yet the cut sheet had an asterisk thing saying may be illuminated by others. We brought that up, and it was pointed out to them that if they chose to illuminate, they would have to come back again to see us because of that illumination. So this was looked at as unilluminated. But the recommendation for that, too, was that the aluminum letters being mounted flat on the surface was going to look too flat with a lot of relief. So it was our recommendation that they be pin-mounted and brought off the face of the wall by about a half inch. So it also gives it a little bit of depth. And with those understandings, we recommend final approval for them.
I'll second it.
Discussion?
I appreciate that you addressed the issue of illumination because I think that was important and,
yeah,
and has slipped through in a previous project, which specifically was the Union Bank on in the Fairview Shopping Center. The signs that were submitted were to be non-illuminated, but if you go over there at night, you'll see that there are uplights on two sides of the building that one of which is not working, fortunately, but the other one is blazing light up at the sign and up into the heavens. So that's a very good point, and I'm glad that you caught that. The other interesting thing for me is to do with the logo itself. And again, using Union Bank as an example, if they had come in with something that said Union Bank and then in the bottom Santa Barbara or Union Bank Goleta, I guess what I'm calling into question is the logo itself. Is what is going up on the pole sign, for example, that's replacing the Hyatt signage, which is the corporate logo, is their corporate logo Hotel Goleta Santa Barbara? Is that the logo of the hotel or not? I guess is the question
know.
I have.
I don't know. And to be perfectly honest, because it was such a light colored letter, I totally missed it.
Yeah. So again, when we're looking at signage like that, I'm perfectly happy with the Hotel Goleta concept. It's just the smaller Santa Barbara reference that's a little confusing to me as a Goletan, number one, as a city resident, that's in the sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is the sign representing? Is it, you know, what is the logo of that business? Is it Hotel Goleta or is it Hotel Goleta Santa Barbara? And so, I mean, I would ask the subcommittee that question, and it doesn't seem like you addressed it in your discussion with the applicant. So
no, but one reason was because the lettering on the sign was not in excess. I don't believe it was in excess of the size for text lettering. Usually when that comes up is when the lettering is in excess of what we want for a typeface.
Right.
And then it comes up that, well, is this just lettering or is it part of the registered trademark logo?
Correct. Correct.
And that's usually when that comes up, but that didn't come up in this time because the lettering is not...
Wasn't an issue.
And that...
Okay.
It's the name of their company. I guess that might be more of a question for the applicant, I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't confuse me because I know I'm still in Goleta even though I see it. But it's a little bit of a – kind of takes me aback a bit. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
it's
why is their letterhead – on their letterhead, it's kinda like, is it it's going kinda, to say it's, that – is that like, logo going to be on their letterhead?
It's kind of like the Bacara where they're with their mailing address where they give the Hollister Avenue address – and the 93117 zip, but it's Santa Barbara.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can appreciate that mm-hmm. in that context because I've had mail come to my house addressed to me in Gaviota, California, 93117, or Santa Barbara, California, 93117. But for the signage, I guess it's still in my mind begs a question. If the board is happy with the sign as presented, I'm not going to make a big issue out of it.
I believe we're happy with it, but I do beg pardon of totally missing something that should have seen.
And I guess, again, the bigger issue procedurally is if the sign subcommittee is going to get the first bite at it and other members of the DRB have issues, should we take it upon ourselves to come to the sign subcommittee meeting and make comments to the sign subcommittee or
probably wouldn't hurt.
I mean,
that's a good question.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't see that there is an issue with more the point of having the sign subcommittee is to help facilitate the review of signage by a smaller subset of the board. Now, if there are other members of the board who also wish to weigh in on the item prior during the sign calendar, they're certainly welcome to do so.
Yeah.
As a DRB member,
sit
at the same side of the table as the subcommittee members and make the comments or ask the questions.
Yeah, I think the concept is that you would like to have you want to delegate the review of the signage to the sign subcommittee and help. But so if you're not on the sign subcommittee, you would want that member would help inform the discussion.
Yeah.
If that helps make sense. But I do want to help keep the integrity of the role of the sign subcommittee in helping to facilitate the review of the sign calendar. So the same with the consent calendar. If there's issues with something on the consent calendar, you know, other board members are welcome to join in the discussion. Ultimately, as you know, these items do go to the full board for the actual approval motion. That's, I guess, the parameters I would outline to help facilitate the business of the meeting. So.
Okay.
Chair Branch?
Yes.
I had a couple questions related to these signs, and it has to do actually with the illumination. In terms of the cabinet sign, will there be the same number and same intensity of fluorescent lights, will that not change from its current configuration is one question. And then for the ground sign that's lit by external illumination where it just kind of shines up into that, will that be the same level of illumination that currently exists for the Holiday Inn sign?
The one with the wall sign that was pointed out by staff to the applicant that providing illumination that our approval is unilluminated, and if they provide illumination, they have to bring it back before this
board.
Thank
you. Again. Okay.
As far as the cabinet sign,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that we really talked about the level of illumination coming through the sign. I think we assumed it would be less, just because of the color and relative size of the push through letters, as opposed to that big H on the Holiday Inn that was there previously.
I just want to chime in. The can sign or the cabinet up for the freestanding sign was an existing cabinet that they are reusing, so I would expect that the illumination would be the same as what it was before. Mm-hmm. The benefit we're getting here is that the background of probably 80 to 90% of the background of the sign is now opaque, so even though there's a lot of light inside, there's probably less coming out the face.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so you have made a motion. Did we get a second?
Yes, I seconded.
And you seconded? Okay, so all those in favor?
Aye.
I'm going to abstain just on that issue that I presented with the the name of the company.
So we're not going to have that lovely chartreuse green light on the building anymore?
Nope. And just for clarification, if anybody on the board sees this and they have a question or an issue or something that they notice, by all means, come to the meeting and let us know, or knock us in the head or tell us or something.
Okay. With that, we move to item F4.
F4, yeah, which goes before the full board. So, anybody want to announce it? Thanks.
I will need to recuse myself on this item.
Item F4-13-050-DRB, Fuel Depot Signage, 180 North Fairview Avenue.
Shine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. As you might recall, at the last meeting, we had, because of the recusals for this item, we had to reconstitute the board pursuant to procedures of the Fair Political Practices Commission, the regulations, section 18708. Because this is a continued item, the composition of the board that's hearing this continued item should be the same as the last meeting. I think Member Carroll and Member Sheeler may participate if they feel that they've read the minutes and feel comfortable participating in the discussion. But I believe the constitution of the board last time was the chair and see if I can recall, Member Smith and Member Wignott.
Sat as the chair, and then
right.
Yeah. The branch was name was picked at random. And constituted the quorum.
Right. So Chair Branch can continue to hear this item because he was he heard it last time.
Can I still do it as chair, or do I need to be?
What is the pleasure of the board is fine. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. As this before this comes up, I'd like to say that the applicant, Mr. Price, had called me actually on my way to the meeting to let me know that that he wasn't going to make the meeting, but that he had the plans he had submitted had covered the comments from before. Including raising the bottom sign to a height of 8 feet.
That is correct. And John Price is not here today, but we do have Margaret Shepner to represent John Price.
Okay, terrific. If you want to come up and
Shine, could you put the comments up from the last meeting, please?
And Chair Branch, while they're looking for that, I just wanted to declare that I have made a site visit there, and I did review all the materials from the previous meetings and watched it, so I feel that I can maybe pick up where you all left off.
Okay.
My apologies. I do not have the motion from the last meeting, but I'll have Mr. Concepcion read the comments.
They're on the meeting minutes, so maybe you could just display the minutes of the last meeting.
I can go over the comments too in my report.
Okay.
Or presentation. Good afternoon. So this is at the existing Arco gas station, the southeast corner of Fairview and Encina, and the rebranding to become Fuel Depot. They have a proposed signage. This was continued from the last meeting of July 9, and they DRB or the sign subcommittee continued that item. So to recap, the motion from that meeting for sign A, which is the cabinet sign on top of the pole, the DRB was in support of that sign change out. They made one comment in which the blue background be opaque, and the applicant has come back with revised plans showing that the blue background is now indeed opaque. Skipping to signs C and D, which are the canopy signs. Those are in the individual channel letter signs. The DRB was also in support of those signage, so the plans remain as is.
Okay.
As for sign B, which is the existing sign cabinet sign at the bottom of the pole, there is much discussion about that, and that was the item which the board asked staff to look at its non-conforming status. So basically, that sign is a permitted non-conforming sign that was approved back in the 1960s, and there have been several approvals for sign face changeouts ever since then. Its non-conforming status for the reasons of part of the sign is 1 foot into the public right-of-way, and that was how it was originally approved with the county. And also for the base of the pole, the sign ordinance says it should be 5 feet from the right-of-way. Right now it is 3.5 feet from the public right-of-way, and that's how it was also originally approved. So the applicant worked with staff and decided to basically take the existing cabinet sign, do a sign face change out, lift the sign up so it's the bottom of the sign will be 8 feet from the bottom of the pole. So in doing this move, staff still sees this as the same sign consistent with the original approval. It's still the same sign size, same cabinet on the original pole, so it does not make it any more non-conforming than it was originally. And also, it is less of a liability since now you have that 8-foot mm-hmm. clearance for when people walk by. So that ends the staff's oral report, and also Margaret Shepner is also here and to answer any questions.
So they addressed all the issues we asked them to address. Okay.
There was one option on the sign A regarding the yellow trim around the top being internally illuminated, and does the resubmittal show whether they're going to be doing that or not, Michael?
I'm sorry.
The yellow trim, is that going to be internally illuminated as part of the...
Correct, okay. Yes.
And the sign that's going to be elevated 8 feet, sign B, that's going to be 8 feet from the bottom of the pole now, it's a face change only, so the internal illumination that's presently exists will continue to internally illuminate that.
Yes, it's with the addition of the red, only, with of addition the LED price display.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Anybody else have anything? Seems pretty straightforward. All right. Someone want to make a motion on this one?
So I would move for approval of the resubmitted material with the. Sign B raised 8 feet from the base of the pole, and the other signs we're already comfortable with.
So. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I get a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. And now that'll take us to the conceptual calendar.
G113-049-DRB Chevron Multiphase Extraction Remediation System, 6895 Hollister Avenue.
And while, is the applicant here? Okay, yes. You guys want to come up? While they're coming up, can we have declarations?
Yeah, I've been to the site many, many times. I'm familiar with it and have not had any conversations with the owner or anybody involved with it.
Great.
Same for me?
Same for me.
Same.
I visited the site not many, many times, but I am familiar with it. Haven't had any conversations with the applicant.
Same.
I have visited the site and not had conversation with the applicant.
Awesome. Hello again. This is for the Chevron Multiphase Extraction Remediation System. It's at the southeast corner of Stork and Hollister, across from the Camino Real Marketplace, zoned C2 Retail Commercial Zone District. And this is for conceptual preliminary review. So basically, they want to do a multiphase extraction remediation system, which consists of the simultaneous extraction of contaminated groundwater and soil vapor. What you will see from the street is basically a new 515 square foot above ground mechanical equipment area, which will be enclosed with an 8-foot high vinyl fence. Here is the material of that fence and also the color. Also, they will be utilizing an existing network of underground wells, which will be outfitted with new pipes and pumps. For the existing gas station, there will be no additional floor area or other exterior changes to the gas station, just the enclosure and the mechanical equipment. So that concludes staff's oral report, and Brenda Evans of ACOM and also Nick Pryor are here to represent the applicant.
Okay. Welcome. Anything you guys want to add to the staff report or? Oh, yeah. Need to get your mics on. There's a button you press right there. Yep, that's it.
Yeah, I think if you could if you could just walk the board through the plans, that would be
state your names for the record, please.
Okay, I'm Brenda Evans with AECOM. I'm the project manager.
Oh, and my name is Nick Pryor, also with AECOM, and I'm an environmental scientist.
Perfect.
Okay. So I'm probably going to defer to Nick on a lot of this because he had most of the the work on the plans and so forth. One thing that is different that Michael said that has changed, we just got news today from our subcontractor that's building the unit, is that it will have to be larger than a 515 square foot compound because the equipment won't fit as designed. So we expect to have to add another foot and a half to the north end of the compound.
So in length, not in width.
Correct.
We could.
The north end, yeah.
Towards Hollister.
Towards
yes.
Hollister.
So I don't know how much background. Do you need background on why we're putting this in and what we're meant to accomplish?
I'd like to know.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be good. And also the duration to accomplish the goal would be helpful.
Okay. So there was a release of gasoline at this station at some time in the past. Soil and groundwater have been impacted, and we prepared a corrective action plan to clean that up to the current regulatory standards. The plan has been approved by the Santa Barbara County Environmental Health Department. Tom Rezac is the project manager there. So the plan for the multiphase extraction is approved method to clean this up. So that's the brief background. Once the compound and all the equipment is installed and functioning correctly, we don't expect to have to operate it for more than a year. That is assuming that everything operates correctly. I've had other sites where we get all the equipment in and we have to do permit modifications because we get different compounds, you know, emitted from the system that we didn't get before and things like that. So once it's fully, you know, functional and operating within the parameters of the permits, we hope to, you know, achieve the objective within a year.
The gas spillage is not from the existing tanks?
No.
From previous tanks that have been removed.
Yeah.
And so you're just cleaning up something that
historical
is not going to be continually recharged by from the existing tanks.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. Does the board have any questions?
I have a question. I was wondering why you chose the location that you did, and did you look at any alternate locations on the property?
We looked at every conceivable location on the property. It was suggested at one time that we put the compound in along the southern boundary.
Yes.
There's a two-story office building right there. And we're going to have an emission stack that'll be about 17 feet high, and it would be emitting about, you know, head level.
I see. Okay.
And we would expect a lot of objection from that property owner. He's not been particularly cooperative in the past. Has not allowed us access to do any assessment on his property. So, you know, we had looked at some other locations more convenient, you know, to us, and this was the location that we came up with working with the site operator, and based on some historical discussions with people at the city of Goleta, that they don't want that compound out there on the frontage.
Right.
So this was the only location that we could come up with that would not present a myriad of you know, okay, other hurdles to overcome.
What sort of clearance will you have once this is constructed between it and the pump islands on that side? How much clearance will we have there?
The dimensions on there, what is that?
It's 16 feet 3 inches.
I didn't see that on this.
We submitted the original set of plans, and then Michael asked for a revised set with that dimension that you're asking for.
Okay.
So I don't know which plan you have.
Well, mine is it's sheet 6 of 16.
Yeah.
There's no revision dates on it.
16 trees shown on that plan.
Yeah, it should say.
Yeah. Okay. Pardon me?
16-foot trees.
I didn't even see it.
That's not on your plan. That's weird.
Yeah.
It's on mine.
Okay. So it wasn't even on this one.
Not on mine either.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know. That's my question. If anybody else weighed in here,
that's the distance to the fence or the distance to the bollards?
That's to the bollards.
To the bollards. Okay. Yeah.
Question I had on the double gate is that proposed as the same as the single gate, just double?
Yeah. There's 4-foot gates, and then on that one end, we would just have to open up and stake open.
And the trim color, the post color and the trim, top and bottom trim on the fence, what is that proposed at?
It's the same type
same
of material,
material,
that vinyl.
Same color, same material.
Right. And that material we can get in gray or white, or it comes in a few
shades. Variety of colors. That seemed like the most closely matched color to some of the other buildings, like the office building in that area and some of the trim on the gas station. So.
Here's the manufacturer too of the fencing. So.
Yeah, good.
And our experience with that material is that if anybody vandalizes it, it cleans up pretty easily. So if somebody graffitis it, you know, a station attendant can clean it off with Simple Green, or like we have when we go to visit it for the operation and maintenance visits, we can clean up the fence pretty quickly.
That's the same for like any incidental scrapes or bumps that it may get from.
Yeah, it holds up real well in UV. Mm-hmm. So
okay,
the
other than chain link.
The detail, the design detail on sheet 12 of 16, the fence posts that capture this panel, they slip over galvanized posts that are set in concrete?
That's correct.
Okay. Because my neighbor has a identical fence to what you're, and but he didn't, I mean, it's you're doing it a little differently, probably for strength, I guess.
That's right.
The steel posts are internal to the.
It has a galvanized pole inside it and a square bracket that slips over that pole and.
That you
screw on that and then
you fasten the exterior post too.
Yeah, okay. And the corner posts we actually fill with concrete just for a little extra traffic rigidity.
Yeah, and they also have to support the weight of the double gates at the north end too, so those have to be stronger. Okay, and then the only thing that's going to be visible above this 8-foot fence will be the vent stack.
Mm-hmm.
And your plans showing that is at 13 feet total, so it's going to protrude about 5 feet above the fence. I mean, on an elevation view. And what color will that stack be painted? And is it just it's an open vent? Is there a cap on it or?
Look and see if they specify the color. But usually it's like a steel.
A gray.
Yeah.
Sort.
Yeah, it's a neutral color. I've had them at other sites where they've been a similar color to that fence.
Okay.
But we'd have to check with the manufacturer's specifications on that.
And is the 13 feet the typical height? I don't know what exactly is being vented. You say this is coming off the oxidizer. You've got natural gas going in and you've got soil vapor going in and
burning it up at a very
so
high
the
temperature.
Product of combustion is
it's mostly water vapor and oxygen.
Yeah.
It's a very efficient combustion. The unit itself is permitted with the Air Pollution Control District.
Okay. So I mean it's not I mean having it up only 13 feet doesn't create a problem for the neighbors as far as some
no.
something being generated that is a
no.
Okay.
Carl?
I don't know what kind of trees they are, but the trees along the eastern property line,
mm-hmm.
Do those need to be trimmed back in order to allow this vent to occur? What is there some setback distance to vegetation?
Well, that's something that, honestly, I was expecting to go through when it got to review with the fire department, what kind of specifications they may have. For that, the manufacturer doesn't specify that, but our intention with where we were placing with this was so that the stack would be like in between trees.
Okay.
It looks like it's a 6 to 7 foot skirt on those trees or carrot wood trees.
Yeah. So these trees
could be okay. Okay.
Something a bit in the way.
What do you think, Simone?
Yes.
Yeah, we tried to kind of show it on that elevation view. There, like, getting that oxidizer, the stack, so it's going to be the oxidizer in between the gap.
What's the temperature of that stack during operation? Ish.
Exit exhaust temperature?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff coming out of there's stuff that's being burned and coming out of that. So that thing may
hot.
Heat up or something.
Because the internal
hot.
Combustion is what, 1,500 is or 1,600 is what's going on in the in the oxidizer. So it's hot in the equipment. Does Nutera have that in their specs about the?
I was looking for that.
So it might fry half the tree just by proximity?
Well, that's where I was heading with that.
Yeah, exactly.
It just seems to me like the trees will have to be replaced.
Well, the one that's closest.
Do you remove it now or do you remove it later once it's burnt? Or?
Well, our goal would not to be operating anything that would actually burn the tree. So, you know, we would look, we can get those specifications. I'm pretty sure we can find out what an estimated exhaust temperature would be.
And I would imagine that is what the fire department is going to look at.
That's what I would expect.
Once they have that information and they see the proximity of the tree, they'll make a call.
And I've talked to the fire chief over there, and he told me that this would all be under review after it gets past you guys.
Okay.
I think
so.
Based on experience, the way the trees are overhanging, and where the stack's going to be, and then based on the height of the stack, the trees aren't going to suffer any from the heat coming out of it.
Okay.
We have in the past used like an infrared gun to measure the temperature of objects near to stacks,
mm-hmm.
exhaust stacks. If it were a problem, I mean, obviously we would want to trim the trees back, and I realize that would be maybe an issue with the city, but...
Okay.
Well, the stack is in one specific area, so it seemed like your whole 53 feet now length. I mean, there's just a small portion where that stack is. It isn't the whole line of trees,
right.
I don't think.
Right, so. It's just that one spot.
Yeah. But at the other end, you have the carbon tanks, and they are concealed behind the fence. They don't rise above it. What is the what's the life expectancy on those before they need to be replaced or recharged? Or what? I mean, do you just swap them out, or what's the...
Well, you replace the media, the carbon media inside the vessel.
So someone comes in and takes the old media out and puts new media in right in situ.
Yes.
Okay. So once they're there, there's no, and you have a concrete berm surrounding that area in case there's
we have a
pipe break or something. There's secondary containment. And is that alarmed? So if water gets in that containment area, there's a float switch or something that lets people know that there's a problem?
On the compound drawing, shows the sump collection there. There's two floats inside of there that are redundant high highs, and then there's also the float that turns the sump pump on and cycles rainwater or any water that would have leaked in mm-hmm. back to the surge tank.
Okay.
The surge tank has redundant high level switches inside of it, so when it rises, it trips the pump to cycle water through the groundwater system. And if for some reason that pump were to fail, and the water kept rising, it would trip the other high level alarm, which would shut the pumps down.
Okay. And then also you have outside a emergency disconnect, so someone could come and just shut all the electric down.
Yeah, that's right.
For part of the system.
So there's an emergency disconnect, and we keep a padlock on that, and we provide the combination to the station attendant and to the fire department.
That's the Knox lock, Knox box, whatever they...
Yeah, in some municipalities, they have a specific lock that they want, and other ones, we just have a code, and it's a common master lock.
Okay.
The other thing I was noticing on this plan is like the double doors and the single doors. It seems like by design you have a removable traffic bollard that has to be removed mm-hmm. before you can get the door open. And is that by design or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we put a lot of expensive equipment inside this compound,
right?
So we want to protect it.
And the bollards are kind of a lockable steel one that. I mean, there's a lock at the base, sort of, so...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, in fact, it's detailed.
Yeah, so that, I mean, in an emergency, those things are in the way of someone wanting to get into the inside the enclosure, are they not? Or in an emergency, someone's going to come that will have a key to be able to remove those things? I mean, I'm just...
So we use the same lock that we would have on the emergency disconnect.
I see. So someone could easily remove the bollards to get into the interior? Okay. And the only other question I had was I noticed that there was some safety equipment that was going to be installed in the equipment enclosure, and it talks about a fire extinguisher in a fire extinguisher cabinet, and then an eyewash station, storage box, fire blanket, first aid kit, where do those, I see you have two fire extinguishers, and is this HES box, is that where the eyewash and other stuff is located?
So we usually install that after all the equipment's in, and we just put it at a location that's closest to the gate and has space on the fence to hang.
And the signage that's required, that's something you will discuss with the fire department as to where those signs go. That's not coming back to the design review board for the sign subcommittee, is it, or is it?
Chair Branch and Member Wignon, members, safety signs are not under the purview of the sign ordinance, and whatever signs are required by regulation, federal, state, they'll just have to put them up. So, yeah, there's not much leeway we have with that. So, yeah.
We do. We have one sort of placard that encompasses all the required safety signs rather than having, you know, a hodgepodge of miscellaneous ones. And it's just the basic, you know, equipment starts and stops automatically, mm-hmm.
and
24-hour emergency
right.
contact number.
Okay. So that'll be kind of near the emergency shutoff switch area.
The public view, you know.
Yeah.
So if there's a problem with the equipment, we want to know as soon as possible.
right. Okay.
Did you have something, Carl? Bill?
I did have one question. Left, you rest of you have covered all of them nicely. Has to do with, it refers to segregation of stockpiled soil, and under excavation in the specifications, it's talking about excavated soil. Is there going to be a necessity to dig down very far and then to stockpile soil somewhere on the site for a period of time?
When we install the equipment, we'll run. You can sort of see the sort of the horizontal network of piping that goes out to the well field. So the depth of the trench ranges, you know, anywhere from.
Can you turn your microphone on, please?
It's on.
So just the depth of the trench would be, you know, anywhere from 0 to, let's say, I would say at max 3 feet deep. And then during that trenching activity, we stockpile it. And we'll have it profiled before the installation begins. So we move it off site pretty quickly. We try not to impact the business as much as possible. So we keep the stockpile down to a minimum. And we have it covered. So we'll put down polypropylene sheeting. And at the end of every day, if we have any stockpiling there, we cover that up for prevent it from, you know, any rain or anything like that.
And have you figured out where you plan to place that, or is that to be determined later?
We typically we place it in a spot that's not going to prevent traffic or the fuel truck from delivering fuel. And somewhere that's near to our work activities, so we're not making a million trips back and forth across the site with the Bobcat.
So it's not being stockpiled for a long term. It's basically stockpiled only while you're installing the pipe and then using it to backfill?
Yeah, it wouldn't be there longer than 2 weeks.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Any comments from the board?
Just to follow up on that issue of burning the trees. I think it'd be helpful if we had the tree locations on the site plan.
Okay.
So we could kind of look at that and see if it's an issue or not.
Sure.
Carl?
I have two things. I want to, I think what Aaron just mentioned is the first step of understanding where the trees are relative to the exhaust pipe so we know whether we expect the problem or not. And then just long term, I think just being safe that if for some unforeseen reason one of those trees or half the tree dies, I think at the end when this thing gets pulled out, we're going to want to condition it to replace the tree.
Okay.
Seems to make sense to me. And then my only final comment is I'd like to consider maybe a slightly darker color. So I'd like to see maybe the clay or I mean, this, I'm afraid while this looks fine in here, when it gets outside, it might be a little bright.
I was thinking the same thing.
And so it might be nice to just tone that down some.
That.
Yeah, maybe. Actually, maybe the stone or the, yeah, you know.
Okay.
So I guess just revisit it, the color of this, with the intent of trying to deepen it up and darken it so that it maybe recedes a little bit more.
Okay.
Those are my comments.
Anybody else?
Nope.
The color was the only comment I had at the moment about the darkening of the fence.
And probably the vent stack should be color to match whatever the fence ends up being, just for consistency.
If possible.
That's,
right, and
it may or may not be able to. But
the one thing that might come up on that, I've seen it at another site of mine where the stack actually had been painted. It gets
if it's
so
very hot,
hot,
I was just
that.
As soon as
yeah.
I said that, I thought, yeah. So
depending, it may actually make it look worse.
Yeah.
Because when that paint gets
right.
when it gets all charred and
melted off, and
so yeah. probably whatever the manufacturer is providing for the stack, we just will live with. So I retract my comment
okay.
on
okay.
second thought.
All right. Well, somebody want to throw a motion out there then?
Just one question for staff. Just processing-wise, this is just going through the standard process. It doesn't have to go to any other board for consideration, zoning administrator, et cetera?
Would you like to? No, just with a DRB, and there's an associated land use permit that's going to be done at staff level, and then and it goes to the fire department during plan check.
Okay. I'll shoot for, we're here, agendized for preliminary, so I'll say move for preliminary approval with the following conditions: that the applicant restudy the color of the fencing with the intent to deepen it and darken it up some, potentially trying to play off the base color on the Chevron station. For the location of the trees along the eastern property line to be located relative to the enclosure and in particular the exhaust vent stack, so we can determine at the next level if we have a problem with that, and then with the condition that if for some reason the tree dies, or at least part of the tree dies for some unknown reason or because of the vent stack, that the trees would be replaced at the time that this facility is removed.
Can I get a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Bill seconded that.
Do we want to add a date of how soon do you want to come back for final approval on that, into that?
Mr. Chair and members, our next meeting available is August 27th. The first meeting in August is canceled for summer. So that's our next available date. We need plans a week ahead of time. So if that works for the applicant, we have room.
Good. So we'll add to that motion for the return on for final approval on August 27th. Is that what you just said?
Yes. And would you like that for full board or consent calendar?
Wow.
Do you want to be able to see the trees and all that stuff?
Yeah. I guess I'd be okay with consent. I don't know how.
It's okay with me.
Final on consent.
Here.
Yep. Final on consent.
Okay. And we had a second. Somebody seconded that? Oh, we billed to second that. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. We'll see you August 27th.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Michael will provide those plans to you, the new plans.
Yes.
Well, Boyle is now
Boyle.
Part of
Boyle.
AECOM. Yeah.
So did you used to work for Boyle before that?
Or I didn't.
No. I was with Ensor.
You're out of the Camarillo.
Yeah.
Do they still have offices in Ventura?
They still have the building, but no, Boyle moved to our offices in Camarillo.
So do you know Glenn Kelly?
Yeah, he's in our office.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he's retiring now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I think.
When you see him, can you say Bob Wignott?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Work with those guys in another lifetime. Glenn's quite the chef.
Is he? Oh, yeah, always. What was it last? Was
corned beef and cabbage for St. Patrick's Day. And
our next item is H, announcements by members. Anybody have any announcements?
I have a query of our new secretary. Traditionally, at biannual or annual or semi-often, sometimes, we have a PowerPoint presentation of as-built, and I think this is probably something that you were gifted with by Mr. Kollwitz as he went out the door. So do you have any expectation that at some point this year, perhaps, we might be able to see a presentation of some of the projects that have actually been constructed since the last go-around?
Yes, Chair Branch and Member Wignott and members. I do recall that Mr. Kollwitz did put that presentation together and that it was a useful exercise to show what actually does get built versus what got approved at the Design Review Board. It has been almost 2 years, I believe, since the last time. I think we've just been bogged down in work. I think I'll look into it. It is on my list of things to consider in how I want to manage my tenure as their secretary. I think we might pick and choose certain projects instead of doing a whole mass of every sign and every building. I think ones that got hit it out of the park and ones that not so much, I think that's
I think some of the residential additions would be of interest, too. And, you know, we have a couple of new members on the PRB as well. So, and again, I'm not trying to pressurize you any more than you already are, but sometime in the next months or towards the year, maybe a Christmas present or something. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll look at our upcoming calendar and see when we can accommodate such an item. So yeah.
You're coming to coincide with a pizza party.
There you go.
We can look into that.
Carl.
Yeah.
This is really more a question for staff than anything.
Sure.
Is can you just give us hopefully a quick update on the status of the rewriting of the zoning ordinance?
I can.
Will hopefully include a sign ordinance revision?
Yes, I believe I can comment on that. We had kickoff meetings with our consultant. The city council approved a comprehensive contract for zoning ordinance. I'm calling it a new zoning ordinance. I'm not going to call it a rewrite. It's brand new, which includes a sign element. I think there's going to be a certain amount of time where that's going to be drafted, and there is a public participation plan that is the first order of business, and the consultant staff as well as city planning will be working together on reaching out to stakeholders and just to see talk about what's working and what's not working. Once I find out more information, I certainly let the board know. So. Yeah, I am very excited for this effort to go forward. It's, and I think we have the right team in place as well. So, yeah.
Great.
And if I could make one comment, just to close the loop on the what to do about items that come up on the sign or the consent calendar, I'm going to research that a little bit to make sure that. We do this correctly from procedure standpoint. I think it's okay if for other members not on the committees to participate in the meetings, but if it turns out that actually we need to be more formal and just have a request to the planner that this be moved on to the full agenda. I'll figure that out and let you know at the next meeting. So.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you.
And with that, we're adjourned.
All right.
Let's face the music and dance.